Pronouncers, welcome back. It's a boys episode. We're hanging out today. Some cool things that have happened. Farag has done some consulting behind the scenes, and we're talking a little bit about things that he's learned helping some other shops. So directly helping them for, you know, a quarter long program. And that is awesome, especially with some of the insights that you shared. And then a retreat. You basically kicked off a retreat with your friend group. And the things that you guys did, and I think other people should be doing this too, like in the folks that you rely on in your circles, to be able to get away for a couple of days and just talk and have it kind of around an activity or a lot of free time and just being able to spend time together.
If you want to hear about how I hired a hypnotist and failed miserably, you got to give this one a listen. On the coaching side, yeah, it's something
that... What did you learn about hypnotism and how to do it?
On the coaching side of things, yeah, I'm starting to work with a couple of shops. It's something that I've kind of kept underground for a little bit, and we'll talk about it and dive into it here. But we wouldn't be able to do this podcast without our amazing sponsors. Bruce, have you heard of Multicraft Daddy with an underscore?
Who's that?
If you need ink supplies or a daddy, Multicraft Screen Printing and Digital Supplies for over 50 years has been providing you with top brands at competitive prices. If you mention the Printavo podcast, you'll receive an extra 10% off your first order. Dave and the team at Multicraft have been doing an incredible job. They're giving away a bunch of supplies. It might be PMI tape. It might be ink. There's a couple other things that he's doing to sweeten it up. Follow Multicraft underscore daddy on Instagram, DM him and say, I want free stuff, and he'll enter you in to win. So thanks so much, Multicraft. We appreciate you.
Supacolor is the world's best heat transfer made for screen printers by screen printers. They understand the pressures and expectations of running a screen printing business. And that's why they pride themselves on being super fast and super easy. My super wife just picked up her transfers and she always loves seeing that team because they're so nice. Their support's great. It's just a great team there. Make sure to use the code PRINTAVO15. That gets you 15% off your order.
And Supacolor has DTF now. So give them a shot. Let them know how it is. I've heard their color gamut is killer. Do you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department? If you haven't heard of the guys over at Graphic Source, you need to give them a ring. The Graphic Source team runs our entire art department. They work with our team. They plug and play with Printavo and other shop management software. And when it comes to SEPs, mockups, creative art, order management, embroidery, digitizing, back office admin, and customer service, there's no better company in our industry to work with. They have over 30 years in the game. They really know and understand shop needs and have a proven track record of success. They work with hundreds of Printavo shops. And if you go to graphicsource.com and use coupon code PRINTAVOPOD24, you'll get 50% off your first vector, SEP, or embroidery order. Hit up Nick Wood and the team there. They're absolutely crushing it, and we appreciate them. Thanks, Graphic Source.
Easy way. Steven, I know you're spending hours cleaning dirty screens, but it's a thing of the past now because Easy Way screen printing and screen cleaning chemicals have innovative formulas that are designed to work quickly and effectively. So you could spend less time cleaning and more time playing pickleball. Plus, Easy Way is passionate about empowering printers of all skill levels. They offer helpful resources and expert advice to help you succeed in printing. Easyway's got a fun new rebrand as well for the business. They've got an awesome looking booth, great team there as well. They're a great partner in your business. All right, let's jump into the episode. Mr. Pickleballer and Mr. Amateur Pickleballer.
Does Long Beach need
a little pickleball tournament? Is that...
Dude, a Long Beach pickleball tournament would be epic.
I think there's a lot of players.
Do you think?
It's got to be. I mean, it's like fun for all ages type of game.
I played pickleball with Bruce's brother yesterday for like... He got there at 4. I got there at 5:30. We didn't leave till 9.
Really? He tells me that he goes to that area and just plays. He said he got in an argument with these out-of-towners who didn't know the right rules and...
Oh yeah, he talks a lot of trash. He's king of the court though. You could tell like if it was recess, like Nickelodeon show, he runs that place.
That's funny.
It's funny because how much older than than your brother?
7 to 8 years. So he's like 27.
He's like a more fun version of you.
Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't, he just will do things. There's no like thinking it through or thinking about it. He's just like, yeah.
And he's a doctor, so he's wicked smart.
Yeah, which makes it a weird equation of why are you doing that? And then, wow, you're like helping people during the day. Like, this is weird. I've seen too much of you.
So Bruce gets his athleticism from his brother. He takes after his little brother, who's a freak athlete and good at all sports.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Although definitely hitting mid-30s here with a pulled back muscle.
Are you sitting on a heating pad?
I'm trying, but I can't get it in the spot where it's like pinched or it's like really tight. If we have anybody that you know, almost made it through med school, maybe they can give you some tips. But
anyways, what's good with you? How are you doing?
All right. Well, I feel like this episode's got to be more about you because you had a really cool retreat. You've been doing a lot of consulting, and I was like, we need to actually talk about some of this stuff because there wasn't much on the retreat that you did, but as far as posting online, but right. It was really cool. From what I saw, you know, there was maybe 10, 15 people, different shop owners, all the usual suspects. Looks like you guys rented a space, you hung out, you know, maybe talked a lot about this stuff. And so that's one thing over here. And on the left side, I know you've been doing consulting. So you jumped into the world of helping other shops, which I do find interesting. And here's why is that when we do, sometimes we'll do talks at impression shows, you know, MBM shows. And when we first started doing talks, we talked about stuff that was kind of complicated. We were talking about retargeting advertising and PPC like Google Ads and advanced like interviewing and hiring and all this stuff. And I remember looking at you after one of them and I was like, people are just glazed over. I don't think this necessarily relates. And so on the next few talks, we were asking what the size of shop are you, like, you know, are you under X revenue? Are you under Y people, whatever it is, to try to understand what exactly the audience is. And so we really, I'll dumbed it down. We just simplified a lot of the content to stuff that matters to them. And it was so much more engaging. And so now that you're consulting, I don't know if you're consulting for bigger shops, smaller shops, but I'm assuming they're smaller than you. I'm guessing that's also an interesting thing too, where this is probably so easy for you because you're doing it, you're running a business, and you can help other folks skip the potholes in the road. So maybe we could talk about consulting stuff first and then we'll get into it.
You want to go first? Okay. So to preface, as Bruce is alluding to, we still do occasionally, but we were giving these talks at Impressions. And I think we're probably the two youngest speakers there. And, you know, we were talking all about automation, technology, different apps to use. And Bruce even encouraged us to write a book. I think we have 3.8 stars on Amazon. it was a good marketing. It was great. We gave a bunch of them away. It was super helpful, but it was super early
Those
in our
bad
career.
Ratings, by the way, are because the books came in bent.
Okay. I didn't order the books.
I don't know
from
why,
Temu.
But they did.
I didn't find the Temu of book publishers. to order, that's on you. But we were doing that, and early on, you know, I'm probably between $1 million, $2 million in revenue, and I immediately got hit up for coaching and consulting. Hey, Steven, can you help us build this? Can you help us automate? And I started doing it a little bit, and I just kind of realized I still have so much left to learn and do for myself. That it was a little naive, a little immature, a little too early for me to really start, you know, start doing that. And so I actually like pulled it back completely and was like, you know what? This is a distraction. I need to be focusing on my business. It's really fun to teach. I have so much fun talking to shops. It's like a great, great pastime. But I recognize that I wasn't quite ready for it yet, that I really should be focusing on my business. Fast forward, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, our business is a much different beast now. I have an insane leadership team. I've also made every possible mistake ever. And I feel like I'm at a point now where I can start to take those mistakes and turn them into really teachable moments and help other shops avoid those mistakes, but just move so much quicker. And so I've decided to start working with a few shops. I've limited it to like two shops per quarter, because that's really like what my schedule will allow for. And the idea is I want to kind of co-CEO the shops with them.
Okay. So the shops that come to you, what are their general problems and what do they look like as a business?
So I've worked with a handful of them and we're talking, you know, one or two person shops, super small, right? Family owned that are trying to break out into the next level, like all manual shops that are trying to upgrade, get ready for that first auto, to shops that are in that mid-level, trying to crack $1 million, 4 or 5 employees, all the way to shops that are, you know, $3, $4, $5 million that are like, how do I operationally make this super efficient, build out an org structure. So I've actually gotten to work with completely different levels, but in every different instance, what the shop needs is completely different, right? Like there is no diagnose and prescribe per shop whatsoever, right?
Really? Okay. So is that because of the different sizes or is that just totally different problems, different skill sets?
You know, I think in every business, you know, you might have production, manufacturing, operational problems, mm-hmm. or you might have sales, growth, marketing issues, or you might have like administrative finance issues. I'd call it like kind of the third bubble, right? And so for a shop that's really good at production, they might not understand their sales success, marketing model, and how to really look at customers and how to track that and how to grow their sales. Not in like the Kevin Baumgart way, but more in like the, hey, we're going to build really good trackers for AOV and we're going to really understand who our best customers are and we're going to focus on our segments and our niches and things like that. On the flip side, there are shops that have owners that are flying by the seat of their pants. The owner is the salesperson and the production manager and the CFO, and they're just running in this hamster wheel trying to keep their head on straight. And so a lot of it is actually just thinking through, okay, what do we want to operationally like work on first? And how can we make a six-figure impact on one part of your business to liberate you a little bit to do more of what you want to do, right? And so it could be production, it could be sales, it could be administrative, right? Like I think what I've learned is that not every owner of every business is going to be exactly like me. They're all going to they have different goals of what they want, right? And so to try to blanket them all and put them in, you know, one category, I think it's unfair to what their goals are.
What do you mean? Like what are the different things people want? Is it more time? Is it I don't want to do this role? Is it I want more sales? Like I'm just curious what the specific examples are.
A lot of times it's an owner that's the catch-all in a shop and everything they should be focusing on, they're not focusing on because they're delivering orders, because they're reclaiming screens, because they're taking a rush order. A lot of it is trying to liberate them from the day-to-day crap that sucks them into the business. And so like that example right there, working with a shop that we were really trying to focus on procedures and org structure. And we realized it was actually a recruiting and management issue and leadership thing of employees not knowing their role definitions, what they were responsible for, and the owner just taking everything in between.
Right? Wow.
And so there's just so many instances. Now, there are some instances where an owner's like, I really love this part of the business. And if that's the part of the business you love, say, you know, they love being on press or they love being on the production floor. Well, then we have to focus on, you know, automating the sales and success and customer service process. Do you see what I'm saying? Like it's different for everyone.
Do you think half of it is, we talk about this here where I do feel like as owners, we do know sometimes the things that we need to do, but we either delay them or we push it off or we just don't. Like we don't get excited by spending time on that. defining roles, for example, super boring, really complex, especially if you've already have everyone set up and they're doing multiple things and, you know, trying to unwind that's not great, but and it's just a bit of a sounding board between you and them and they sort of self figure it out and you help them? Or is it, hey, look, like we were here. I remember being there. We were in that spot where we were doing 500K and want to get to 1 million. Here's what you need to be able to look out and start doing to be able to get there, or else you're not going to do it.
I think what you're saying is, like, do you reverse engineer it? Like, is it a come to Jesus kind of thing? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Like, are you literally just saying this is what you need to do? Or is it them? They know what they need to do, but you kind of bring it out of them and then they go back and do it.
A lot of times, and
or both maybe.
A little bit of both. A lot of times, you know, and I work with coaches really closely. I have my own coaches. I've been through lots of workshops, trainings, you name it, all that stuff. Yeah. A lot of times the coach is just a mirror for you to just admit things to them, right? Set your priorities and have someone that can hold you accountable. Right. And so, I don't know, like, we follow Tim Ferriss a lot. You're on a Tim Ferriss high right now. I know that.
Yeah, I'm reading every morning now.
And you sent me a quote. You said, being busy is most often used as a disguise for avoiding a few critically important but uncomfortable actions. I'll read that again. Being busy is most often used as a guise for avoiding few critically important but uncomfortable actions. And
it's a banger quote.
It's a banger quote.
It really makes you think.
The role of the coach, or I call it like accountability buddy, is to figure out what those few critically uncomfortable actions are and keep realigning you to those. It's no different than having a trainer at the gym.
Yeah.
Most owners know what they need to do. How do they do it is sometimes really tough. I think the how, I'm able to give them my playbook. Hey, this is the tracker that you're going to use, right? This is what we use. It helps us out a ton. Let's install it. We'll get it to work really quickly. But a lot of times it's just holding them accountable every week to that exact critical, like, action, whatever that might be. And it changes from shop to shop. I'm curious on the Tim Ferriss stuff. So Bruce, you're reading 4-Hour Work Week.
Banger book.
And you're reading it.
Look,
what else?
I'm 15 years late. Okay. I know this book was very popular. It used to be very popular, but it's weird because a lot of the principles are like becoming repopular again, hiring VAs, outsourcing, you know, a lot of different pieces of your business to folks overseas. You can get like a salary arbitrage. I mean, one of the big principles that he talks about, and maybe you see this with your consulting clients, is the first thing in the day should not be checking email, should not be checking Instagram, should not be checking Twitter, should not be, you know, chit-chatting around. It should be completing the most important tasks that you have to do first thing in the day. And that's what he emphasizes. And so I thought, awesome, let me try this. Like, this can't be that hard, right? So if you ever start your day and you open up your laptop, you know, you sit in your chair, you get your coffee, and you look at your task list, there is the strongest, craziest urge to do the stupidest, non-important, but quick task ever on your list. And so that's another important thing. Again, I'm only 30% of the way through. I see the Kindle little percentage thing. So I know how. That's why last time I was 25, now I'm 30. Okay. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about, though, is do you see different pieces of advice that are common across different size of shops? And like, you know, like, is there a bit of a templated form? Obviously, you know, if people want to do, you know, work directly with you, it's like, they could probably email Steven at Canvas Inc. But I'm assuming there's folks too that are like, let me start with the basics first here. You know, I'm a 750K shop. I'm a $2 million shop, whatever. What are the foundational things that you think at different revenue brackets that people can think about?
So from 0 to 400K, it's moving from a hobbyist to a real business. I am a real business. I have a P&L. I have a bookkeeper in place. I'm using shop management software. It's literally the basic building blocks of I'm communicating with customers well. I'm using a domain name and an email service that's that's professional. I have a Google listing, right? Those are some checkboxes that we take for granted, but some of them are really tough, right? And if your business doesn't look and appear like a business, doesn't talk or run like a business, then it's pretty hard to even think about that. I think from 400 to a million, it's creating those four or five employees, those key employees around you, like that small core leadership team that you're going to have. I wouldn't even call them leadership team. Your first four or five employees that are so foundationally important for you to get to the next level.
Do you think so that's the same for production staff too? Yeah,
100%. But with that, a lot of times when I look at shops that are in that getting to a million, they don't have processes and procedures. They don't have SOPs. Their employees don't have job descriptions. If you were to ask their employees, hey, what do you do every day? They'll say, what don't I do? You know, we all know how to ship. We all know how to do this. We all share everything, right? And I think from that half million to $1 million mark, it's really, really defining the roles and procedures and how your business operates, right? That's what I see happening over and over and over again. Those companies, they scrap their way to $1 million or they're getting close to it, but the owner is way too involved in it. And I think that's what creates a lot of burnout. I think that's where the owners aren't paying themselves, or they're paying themselves like they're not taking a salary, or they're paying themselves out of profit or whatever's left at the end of the month, right? And I think that's a very, I don't want to say dangerous place to be, but it feels like if you can't break out of that, it could be really daunting and it could feel really hopeless, right? And I think creating the guardrails for that are so important before you can actually start scaling.
I kind of wish at that size too, I would have at that point, and this is, you know, this is a software business, but I think it still relates. I was very focused on the product. Like that was the total goal. I just wanted to build a better product. And I think it's the same for the shop. You know, you just want to get out the next order, help that customer, you know, collect the funds and go to the next one. But I never thought at that stage, which I feel like is the most important as far as where did I want to go a little bit longer term. And it was hard maybe because, you know, you don't really know what could things look like. But if I could dream up my ideal day, like what do I think it may look like? And that may help create a bit of a North Star to get to instead of just almost you and a shovel shoveling out dirt in a hole. And then you dig a hole that's deep enough and you're like, all right, let me go to the next hole and just start digging again. And next thing you know, it's, you know, years and years later and you're still doing the same stuff.
I wish curious. I would have
took a second to think that through a little bit.
So is what you're saying, did anyone sit you down when you were approaching $1 million and say, what do you want your business to look like, feel like, sound like? What do you want your role to be?
No. Did you ever write that down? I never thought about that question. It wouldn't even come close across my mind. It was, we have so much shit to do this week. I have, you know, these tickets, these issues, these people I need to rehire for. It was just so much day to day. I never just stopped, stared at the wall and thought in 3 to 5 years. And that book Traction and the EOS stuff, I think helps you start to think about in 10 years, what do you want your business to look like? I think that's a good stage to do it. And if not, then definitely before 700K, because that's, you know, 750 or so, that you got something really strong that's working.
I think when you're running a $750,000 to $1.5 million business, you're running a nice business. It should be spitting off a couple hundred thousand dollars for you as a owner and from a profit standpoint, right? Like should be, you know, 10% owner's pay, 10% profit. It should be a 25%, you know, what your take home should be. And I
is
think
that the second bracket too?
What?
Or what is the second bracket you were saying?
In relation to the like
second
the next
revenue
stage.
Bracket.
I think stage. That's kind of the million to 1.5, or once you get to 1 to 2, like I'm running something legit here. I've got different, you know, I've got an employee up front that's taking orders. I've got a couple salespeople, right? I've got a couple production people. I have my right and left hand kind of running for me. I'm still running around with my head cut off. I might be making less money right now because I'm trying to invest in automation. I might be buying a new press. I might go to the trade show and say, shoot, I want to buy an embroidery machine, right? I feel like you're in a stage of your business where it's like a puberty stage. You're going through like these growing pains. And I think it's sometimes demoralizing when you're not making more money, but you're churning out more orders. And I think that's what starts to happen in that like 1 to 1.4 range is we're just grinding. We're kind of starting to get more orders, but we're just, our overhead starting to really jump. I think the word overhead becomes more and more relevant. And you start to hear it a little bit more. And the reason I say this, Bruce, is this year more than ever, I've heard more and more shops talking about either closing or selling. I can't take it anymore. We're not getting where we want to be. I'm just giving up. And I'm hearing it left and right. And it hurts my heart to hear that a little bit, because you're like, damn, you grinded for 10, 15 years. You've got all this stuff, you know, you have all these assets. Why is this happening? And so I think part of why I enjoy coaching is being able to work with someone for 2-3 months and then hopefully make like a 6-figure impact. That's what I've always said, is I want to help you make a 6-figure impact and then hopefully shock their business to a point where they can look back and say, okay, that was an inflection point in my company. I mean, are you hearing about it more and more, or is it, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, we've got someone that I want to come on to the show when they're available to that closed. But I don't know the macro. Obviously, it's very hard to see the macro. We do see shops that definitely close. I mean, on a larger scale, but even for us at Inktavo's company, I mean, we're still a piece of the market as far as what we see. My guess is like a Nastar or a Ryanet or M&R, so someone like that who sells to a lot more businesses would be able to know a little bit more statistics. But I do think that things are tougher, right? I mean, you've got interest rates that are higher. You've got the kind of supply bullwhip effect swinging back. Things aren't as rosy as it were in that 2021, 2022 period. But you know what I was thinking about is that I did wish I have a service like that you're offering. If I would have had that earlier on, it's just a less wasted time. The spending less time on bad hires, spending less time on like, should I hire a manager? Should I not? Should I bite the bullet? I think there's a lot of times where it's like, should I make the jump or should I do a little incremental step? Or what's the better thing to invest in, right? Should I focus more on the production side, the equipment side, or should I invest that into a leader or someone just on the ground floor doing stuff? But, okay. What are the other things? Like, can you share a good example of another shop that you helped? Don't mention any names, but like what their problem was and then the solution. I just find these real examples super interesting.
And maybe we'll bring them on at some point. So there was one where incredible individual actually acquired a business, incredible human being.
Can you say what roughly the size of the business they acquired was?
Sub million.
Was it below $1 million?
Below $1 million, but a really nice, healthy, profitable company. Right? With like good auto, everything like that. Could not keep a screen printer for the life of them. Just burning through screen printers, right? And in a smaller area where it's a little harder to recruit. And so we were working on all these processing procedures, and we just realized, you know, every time a new screen printer would come in, they'd last a couple of weeks and it wouldn't work out. And so what we did is we really nailed down like a really intense recruiting plan. We said, okay, for us to recruit the best possible screen printer, we need to source 100 leads or 100 applications. And we literally set that up, right? Like whether it was Indeed or kind of tracking metrics. Okay, if there's 100 applications that come in, I don't care what those 100 look like, whether they're Facebook, ZipRecruiter, Indeed, fine. We're going to write the best job description. We're going to learn how to do a phone screen. And we actually role played and practiced phone screens. And one of them called him on one of the calls, and he picked it up and did it in front of me. And we like practiced the call, because like recruiting is one of the highest forms of sales. And if you don't know how to recruit really well, it's an interesting muscle. how are you going to hire well, right? And so learning how to do phone screens, learning how to do an in-person interview, learning how to set expectations in that interview, learning how to do an actual on-site job training day, right? And actually tracking the whole process until we got to where we're going to make an offer. And even to the point of the offer, how are we crafting that offer? How legitimate are we making it? Are we making to ensure benefits and PTO and our pay and what the first day of work looks like? Bruce, I steal your first day of work document all the time. But we literally made a first day working there. What it's going to be, who are you going to talk to? Because the whole thing was like, every time you hire someone and they quit, you're literally burning $3,000-$4,000 and your time. And so like, we couldn't really take it anymore. And we spent almost 3-4 weeks really, really nailing down exactly this process and actually seeing it through. And you know, I looked at a couple interviews here and there. We'd do some phone screens. We just kind of do it together, but it wasn't, you know, anything out of this world or outlandish. But when I asked him at the end, like, what'd you take away? He's like, recruiting is a process and it has to be done the right way. And I think the best part about it is the next time they recruit, they're going to recruit the same way, right? And so we made an impact on how hiring and onboarding works at that company, which is just something we discovered as a byproduct of trying to work on the business. And as of today, that employee is still working there. So we're good. We're good for a little bit. Haven't heard.
What about was there anything interesting on the training side that he was or was not doing?
Well, it was like, so, you know, you always start out like, okay, how are you training them? Well, they're going to start shadowing people, right? They're going to start here. And instead, we have this like screen printing apprenticeship guide that I wrote. And it's like, you know, 16 weeks. And it literally starts with how to fold a shirt, how to load a shirt, how to unload a shirt, how to do a one color setup, one color flash. And it was like, okay, here is your training guide. And here are the expectations and the outcomes. And I was like,
oh, wow. You know, so you shared like all these resources too. They can just keep.
Yeah. Like, and that was the thing. I was like, you don't have to rewrite this, but I still made him like rewrite it in his own words a little bit. I was like, tweak it. So it doesn't say Campus Inc. at the top, obviously. Find and replace all, but give it to him on his first day and, you know, make sure he's got a swag box of stuff. Right. And, you know, like get lunch the first day, like all of those different things that, after you've run through so many employees and you've had them not work out, they're things that I think of that are no-brainers, but to someone who's never experienced it before, they're like, oh, okay, that's a good idea. Sweet. And so, you know, how you set that employee's first 2-3 weeks can determine their career there. And so that was just like one tangible that came out of an engagement. That was a lot of fun.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
The power of coaching, like even if you know you have to do something, the power of someone hammering it, texting you, calling you, did you do it? Here's what I did, you know, accelerating that process.
Yeah. And
powerful.
Honestly, like,
I mean, use it for everyone's kids got like some sort of coach or whatever for, you know, their team or, you know, why not apply it to other stuff?
Yeah. And I think there's also a friendship component to it, right? Like every shop that I've worked with, I've just gotten closer with. And, you know, I worked with a shop and we were really focusing on some KPIs like AOV, mm-hmm. right? Like how do we drive our AOV up? How do we get 40, 50, 60, 70 orders per month? And, you know, I find myself checking the tracker or they'll text me and be like, boom, we hit goal for the month. Right. And that just, you know, I'm never really going to coach anyone that's doing this, that's running the same exact business as me. Sorry. But in this instance, they're not even close to a competitor whatsoever. And I just like, I want them to win. It's such a cool feeling to see someone win like that. It's really, really special. And so I'm not, this isn't something I'm doing full time by any means. I've literally limited it to, you know, 2-3 shops per quarter. And you know, it's kind of a system that I'm working on. And I'm doing a lot, like Kevin has been pushing me. You've been pushing me a little bit to do this. So I appreciate the push and the nudge. But it is so much fun to really, it is like, there's a lot of fun that comes out of it. And, I've made some really, really good friends across the industry from it. So
that's awesome. How do people get in touch if they want to learn more? Is it just email you?
Yeah, shoot me an email or a DM on Instagram, Steven@campusinc, or just steven.inc_, get in touch with me. You know, and I'm very upfront about expectations, what I will do, what I won't do. We really, really want to define a scope ahead of time. There'll be a time box on it. This isn't something where I'm just going to meet with you for an hour and you just, you know, I'm not your therapist. We're really going to try to make an impact. And so there have been a couple of people that have approached me and I'm like, I don't know if there's a fit here. But if there is a fit, I'll definitely do it. And if we can't work together now, maybe in the fall or something like that. This is the first time I'm talking about it kind of publicly. So, be patient with me.
That's awesome. So cool. I love coaches.
Should we talk retreats?
Everything.
Enough about me. Retreats.
I'm pumped about this. All right. So, well, you did all the talking. You may have to do all the talking again, but, what is this, right? So there's conferences, there's trade shows, and now there's Stephen Ferrig's retreats. what happened? Why'd you set it up? And I guess we'll go from there.
Okay, first of all, it's not Stephen Ferrig's retreats. I'm not a camp counselor.
SFRs.
So Bruce and I are obsessed with this podcast, My First Million. I'm just going to say it. Love the guys there, Sean and Sam. We get a lot of inspiration. We're part of an exec group that they're in. There's some industry folks in there. They put on retreats. And one of the things that they did is they said they rented out an Airbnb. They invited 15 industry folks and peers. We're talking like the founder of Airbnb, Mr. Beast, right? And they just spent good time together. That's it. It's called Camp MFM. And we both listened to it and we're like, damn, I was kind of jealous of it. I was like, this sounds so cool. And so when we go to conferences and trade shows, they're exhausting. Like at the end of the day, I just want to go back to my hotel room and stare at the ceiling because I've just been answering questions all day. Like they're tough.
Or put your feet in the air to
put my feet in the air. Yeah, my feet. Yeah. And I love them, right? You meet so many people. You don't know where the night's going to go. You end up hanging out with Nick Wood, whatever. right. And then, you know, we have like Print Hustlers and ThreadX and some of these really enriching conferences with incredible speakers where you're going there to learn. But I really wanted to do something with just a small group of people that was like more chill, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I have a great text group of shops that I'm in. And it kind of has naturally formed over the years. They're like, they've turned into such a good group of friends. Bruce, you're not in it. Sorry.
I know. I asked about it once and, they're like, yeah, I mean, you could join. It's just that we don't have vendors. I was like, I don't want to
yeah,
be weird.
And so. I was very intentional about that. And so, I was texting and I'm one of the youngest ones in there. Right. And I was like, hey, if we rented out a house and for a weekend or for 2 or 3 days, would anyone be interested? And it was like, yeah, we're in. And so I sent out a poll and I said, we're going to do it from Sunday to Wednesday or Sunday to Tuesday, because everyone's got families. Everyone's got excuses. Like weekends are so busy. Yeah. There's no way we're going to get full participation.
I've also found that out. Getting older, weekends are a wash. So
weekends are a wash. Weddings, you name it. And so we landed on a like 3 days in May, which happened a couple weeks ago. And we set this up probably 5 months ago. And then I basically was like, okay, what's your budget? I'm going to go out and find the nicest Airbnb I possibly can. Because if we're going to do this, we're going to go somewhere nice. We're going to spend time together and we're going to try to make it as chill as possible.
Where'd you guys pick?
We ended up doing Scottsdale, Arizona. We got this really cool nice Airbnb, had pickleball courts, pools, whatever. It was an awesome time. And, you know, 14 grown men in a house under one roof. This isn't like a bachelor party where people like can just sleep on the floor. And so I was like trying really hard to make sure everyone had a bed, right? And there was privacy, right? And it wasn't just like a shit show, if you will. Because I don't think that's really what the premise of it was. There were some bunk beds, but I also didn't want to over schedule either, because I think some of the best conversations
that's
come in downtime.
That's the beauty of the best. Right. Yeah, I agree.
And so we booked it and I said, hey, if you want to go, Venmo me $500. You know, they all sent it all in. And really it came out of like, then once we set the date, the like group kind of got pumped for it, which was awesome. It was super exciting. Nice. And then, you know, the closer we got, being that we're all business owners and adults and like no one's really babysitting each other, everyone kind of divvied up roles, right? So a couple guys were like, we're going to take over food, right? We're going to take over an event. We're going to plan this out. We're going to plan this out. And everyone just kind of divided. I'm going to grab rental cars, right? We ended up, a group of us went golfing the first day, kind of before it started. We went out to an awesome dinner. The following day we went on a hike together. We grilled out, so we really wouldn't have to leave the house because the house was so nice. We're like, why are we going to just like go to, you know, we'll just keep everything here.
Who was manning the grill?
I'll share, you know, TC Tyler was there and he was manning the grill. TC owned food and crushed it.
That's amazing. Shouts out.
It was a Monday afternoon and we're all sitting in a pool just hanging out and talking. Right. And we all own companies together. And it was the first time that I've ever gotten to experience something like that. I made one mistake, one fatal error.
What was that?
So I was like, okay, we want to have some sort of entertainment, right?
What'd you get? Male stripper?
No, no, none of that. I decided to hire a hypnotist.
You were going, oh, because Brett always does the magician or the...
Have you ever been to a show with a hypnotist where it's just freaking insane?
I don't think I've ever seen a hypnotist.
Okay.
In real life.
I've done it a couple times. I've never been hypnotized, but I've seen other people do it. And I was like, this is so cool. So I did a bunch of research. Found a guy on Instagram, TikTok that had hundreds of thousands of followers, reached out to him, booked him, set up like, hey, you know, 15 of us. He's like, oh, this is going to be amazing. I think we got duped.
you had to like the intern version of the hypnotist. They said that. They definitely didn't send out the guru. It sounds like
I didn't check reviews. I think I just checked the fact that they had so many.
Yelp?
I think the fact that they had, and it was his last second. They had so many followers on TikTok and Instagram that I was like, oh, they must be legit. They must have gone viral. Like they're probably on America's Got Talent or something. This will be great, right? And they come and we're all being good sports about it, right? Because you kind of have to follow in suit of what they tell you to do. And first person goes up and you can tell like, nothing's happening. All right, here we go. And then we're like, he's like, okay, you didn't work. Fine. Next person comes up, tries it out.
Who's the first person that came up? And we're just staring.
I think Matt Marcotte tried for the first time.
Oh my gosh. What a funny picture.
So I'm like, in my head, I'm like, maybe we should have just hired a magician or not done this. Or maybe a business coach next time. Because I was
how
like,
how long
I
was it? It was like an hour.
An hour. It was the longest hour of our lives. We wanted to end so.
Were you just laughing or no?
I mean, we were laughing. We were like, is this actually happening right now? This poor guy realizes he's striking out. But at the same time, I'm like, dude, you're a pro. What the heck? I think he was like a guy that if you go to Vegas or you go to. Yeah, if you go to Vegas, you know, the street performers that say, like, I'll hypnotize you.
Yeah,
I think we got one of those. Anyways, nine people later and an hour later.
Oh, everybody.
We tried. We were like, we were trying so freaking. And I was like, I'm in. Put me in, coach. Like, I'm going to try deep breathing. You know, we're going to see if this works. And then I'm like, so I felt pretty stupid. But my friends in good form were like, hey, you know, that was a memory that we will have for the rest of our lives that we will share together. And then we hung out for the rest of the night and then we flew out the next day and that was the trip.
That's amazing. Were there any interesting takeaways from it?
It's really interesting in a relaxed setting to hear what's important to people, right? Family, fitness, fun, finance, and to see everyone in a different walk of life, being pretty vulnerable and sharing what's important to them, but not in a like no boasting, bragging, no one's really judging each other, but it kind of felt a little therapeutic, right? And I think you know, me being younger, just hearing a lot of wisdom from people that are older than me, you know, maybe by 15, 20 years, right? That are telling me stories about life and things that they're dealing with. It's reassuring to know that you're not alone, right? But it's also, it's just so refreshing. I felt very refreshed leaving, right? And, you know, I don't know. It left a pretty positive impact. And yeah, we would probably change a couple things the next time around. Maybe we'd add a little bit more structure to it. But for the first go around, I was pretty pumped about it, and I was happy that we were able to pull it off. So, yeah. Have you, that's you, cool. you just did a retreat too, more of an official one.
There's a business group out there called Hampton. It's kind of like EO. Some people are a part of, and it was a surf retreat. So similar to yours, where a bit unstructured, but the activity that everything was around, like they hired a professional surfer to help coach. And so for the mornings, you know, we talked about that. And then afternoons, we would review video that they filmed of us. But then in between that time, it was a lot of freeform discussions. And that's, I think, to your point, the beauty of it, a little bit of structure, you know, going throughout the day, and then time to just chat and meet people. There was topics that we were talking about, profit sharing, and people looking to sell a business, people looking to buy a business, hiring problems, partner problems. It was just so cool to be able to dive into all that stuff in an environment like that, where everybody cares kind of about the same thing. So I don't know, maybe the smaller, you know, small form group retreats are the next thing that folks get to try, because you definitely build really good relationships and are able to have really deep discussions, even with the unstructuredness of it.
Yeah. And I think what's cool, and this is what, you know, we kind of as a group, we're like, there's a lot of industry leaders in that group. I'll just say that. Right. And I think what we all decided on is like, we don't want this as a thing to make people jealous, like a club or a cult. Right?
Right.
I think that's fucking stupid. But to encourage others to find other people in the industry and create those circles and groups, right? Because I think, you know, I think there's so many of us out there that are dealing with the same exact things. We just have not been connected yet. And so some of the people that were on this trip, I think they're going to be lifelong friends. We're going to be lifelong friends, right? Because of 2 or 3 days. And were we all maybe a little bit nervous? Because we all don't know each other that well, right? There are a couple people I actually had never met before, but are in the group. We're all internet friends, I guess. Trying to create some of those circles and groups from the trade shows, from the conferences, and actually capitalize on them, spend a weekend together. Maybe it's just 4 or 5 people and they want to go hiking. Or maybe it's a group that just, you know, wants to play pickleball, whatever that might be. Finding activities outside of our industry to share with people in our industry is something that I found super, super rewarding. That, you know, and I would, Justin Lawrence, we were kind of reflecting on it. I was like, these are our coworkers. That was a way we kind of talked about the retreat, is these are our coworkers. You know, we all have the same roles in our company, and we're equals here. So I would really, really encourage, in an unstructured way, if anyone wants to throw another one and invite me, I'm in. But yeah, maybe we'll have to figure out how to do another one. Maybe we'll change it up or something like that. So
I think that's the episode.
That's the pod. Good one.
Thanks, guys, for listening. See you in the next one. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.